Welcome to episode 354 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger over at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today I'm interviewing writer-director Lane and Ruckus Skye. They actually wrote the film Becky, which you might remember I featured the directors of that film, Jonathan Millett and Carrie Murnion, on the podcast a few months ago in episode 337, so check that episode out if you haven't already listened to it. But Lane and Ruckus are actually here to talk about their new film, which they wrote and directed, which is called The Devil to Pay. We talk about how they get involved with Becky, and we talk about this new film and how they got it into production as well. These are two artists that kickstarted their careers far from Hollywood. Another great inspirational story. So stay tuned for that interview. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shares really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcast and then just look for episode number 354. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 Weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You just put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. So now let's get into the main segment. Today I'm interviewing writer, directors Lane and Ruckus Skye. Here is the interview. Welcome, Ruckus and Lane, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me today.
Awesome. Thanks for having
us. Good to be here.
So to start out, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up and how did you get into the entertainment industry? Maybe Lane, you can start, and then Ruckus, you can finish up, and just, you know, maybe a 1 or 2 minute kind of overview of kind of where you're from and how you got here.
Well, our stories aren't actually that different, but I grew up in and around Atlanta, Georgia, and had nothing to do with the entertainment industry as a kid. I just was a film fan, had no idea that that was like a thing that ordinary people could do until I got to college. And then I was like, oh, you could study film. That's a thing, which I didn't do, but I was like, that's a thing. And so I started to think about it more seriously, and I'd always written like short stories and things like that. I've been into creative writing. But then after Ruckus and I met, we started being more interested in filmmaking just kind of as a team. And so we started writing things so we'd have something to shoot, and just kept doing that and got better at writing. And eventually somebody was interested in something that we wrote who wasn't us. Story poorly.
That's always a good sign.
Yeah. And I grew up just always doing creative things as well, and writing songs and music and just doing making things. It was just always just making something no matter what it was. And we like to say we accidentally became screenwriters because we, like she said, when we started, the very first thing we tried to shoot was a music video for a song I wrote.
Yeah.
And then, so we, it was an elaborate treatment. And then we said, let's make a short film. It's like, well, we have to write something. And like I said, eventually we wrote a feature script that we wanted to direct, but it started getting passed around and people started asking us if we would write for them, which was never our intention. And we were like, really? Yeah. And so it, like I said, it was not a game plan, which may be frustrating for people that are that is their game plan to hear that.
But no, I think that's interesting to hear. Now, were you guys, did you have some background in, you know, media, producing media? Like, where did that come in? It sounds like you wanted to go shoot this music video. So did you understand how to do lights and camera and editing? Was that something you were just going to learn as you went into the process of shooting the video?
We just figured it out as we went.
I mean, yeah, and we had collaborators who were, you know, wanted to be DPs, and you know, so it wasn't just the two of us, like it was a group of people. But sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
But yeah, no, we learned as we went. I mean, that was our film school, was making short films and weird, you know,
music videos and then eventually commercials and things like that.
Yeah.
But the goal was always in the end was we wanted to make feature films.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's, where were you guys when, where are you now? And where were you guys when you were doing these shorts and the first feature?
We were in Atlanta. but we moved to LA a year ago.
Perfect, perfect. So now let's start to get into some of your sort of story. I noticed on IMDb, Rattle the Cage is your first feature film credit. How did that come about? How did you get that film ultimately into production?
Yeah, it's a very odd story.
It's a strange story.
Well, I guess your audience will probably be familiar with the Blacklist and the Black website. So not the annual list, but the website that they started. We finished that script about the time that the website launched. And that was the what we wrote for us to direct. We thought it was going to be a little indie film we were going to make ourselves. And the director, Majid, who was in the Middle East, read the script, and then they asked about buying it, and we said, no, we're directing it. And they said, what about just selling us the Arabic language rights, like separately, and you keep the English language rights? And we said, okay, because it was kind of free money almost. So they went and made this cool version. And there was no pressure on to us of it being good, because we still always had our version we could make. And it turned out really cool, and it premiered at Fantastic Fest in Austin. And we got to go see it for the first time with them. And it was just just really cool. But that's the script that started getting passed around, that people started being interested in.
And that literally, that's a success story for the Blacklist. You just posted on the Blacklist. You bought the two reviews. I assume the two reviews were pretty good. And then slowly you went up in their algorithm and got some reads that way.
Yeah, it was totally that. And we also got our first, we got our manager, who we're still with, within 2 weeks of putting that script on the website, and we're still with her. And so it was an
early success story.
An early success story for the Blacklist and for us, of course.
Yeah. And just as sort of a non-screenwriting question, or I guess it is screenwriting, when you sold the Arabic rights, does that mean the movie is spoken in Arabic, or is it like an English language movie that they're only going to release in the Middle East?
It's in Arabic, and they weren't allowed to even dub it in English. It was like Arabic only.
Yeah, but
there are English subtitles. It's on Netflix right now with English subtitles.
And they don't own a territory. It's not like they owned the Middle East as a territory. They just owned the Arabic language version of the film.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
Yeah, we call it the pre-make, because we still think our version is the first version, even though we haven't got to shoot it yet.
Now, have you had any pushback? And I'm asking this because I got someone offering me years ago, they wanted to buy the Indian rights they wanted to make basically an Indian version. And I was always a little bit hesitant. Have you gotten any pushback now that the Arabic version has been made? When you send out Rattle the Cage, is it come up? Like, is our producers kind of questioning it? Does it hurt your chances of getting it made, do you think? Has it affected people reading it?
It's been helpful. It was a success what they did, and it's like, well, it's kind of a, what do you call it, I'm a writer, I should be able to come up with this word.
Like a proof of concept, or concept.
Yeah, it's like, you can watch it, here's the successful version of this script.
What was fantastic about being able to watch it was being like, oh, that beat isn't playing how we wanted it to, like, so now we're able to go back and make changes to the English language version that because we got to see it play out, we wouldn't have otherwise maybe known.
But it's not I can't think of a single negative to it.
Okay. Well, good to know. Yeah, good to know. So let's talk about another script that you guys wrote called Becky. And that's actually coincidentally one that came over my desk. And we actually interviewed the directors just a few weeks ago here on the podcast. How did that project move along? And how did you ultimately get that script sold?
Well, John and Carrie, the directors, the original version, starting from scratch, was written by a guy named Nick Morris, who came up with the entire concept. It's his script. Mm-hmm. And the directors got brought on board, and they wanted to do a rewrite. And then they asked for us, because we had met John and Carrie and almost worked together on something and had like a collaboration there. So they wanted just a new angle on it, new direction on it.
And how did you meet them?
We have the same agent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was manager agent type of a thing. Okay, perfect. So let's dig into your latest film, The Devil to Pay. Maybe to start out, you can just give us a quick logline or pitch. What is this film all about?
How are you going to find out how quick we aren't? We're not good at pitching.
Especially things that we already made. Like, so it's about an isolated Appalachian community that kind of has its own laws and its own rules. And there's a farmer who her husband goes missing. And these men show up on her doorstep, and they're from the oldest family on the mountain, and they let her know that her husband had a debt, and now it's on her. And if she doesn't repay it, then her and her son's lives are forfeit, basically. And so it becomes this mystery that she has to unravel to figure out what happened to her husband and and what's really going on.
Gotcha. And what's, where did this premise come from? What's sort of the genesis of this idea?
Well, there's a lot of things. You know, it's weird as a screenwriter, you just put stuff in your brain for later. Like, so we went on a road trip through the South and we stopped at this place called the Museum of Appalachian History, which is a fantastic museum if you get a chance to go. But it's basically one guy's collection of a bunch of paraphernalia from Appalachia, including entire homes. But each item has a little handwritten note that gives you the story behind the item. And just going through there and reading all those little stories, and there's like weird stuff, like a bear suit made out of an actual bear, but it included mittens with like bear claws on
and,
it.
And a guy that lived in a cave and wore that.
And like it's just, yeah, weird. It's like just such
well, the favorite thing is the
details.
There's a glass eye and then a pocket knife, which is what the pocket knife is what took out the guy's real eye.
And then the story,
and then
of, how
the story
lost,
of how he lost his eye. And it's on display. It's just stuff like that. We love stuff
so
like that.
Going through that museum, that just, you know, that was rich territory. And then a couple of years later, we met Danielle Deadweiler through the Atlanta filmmaking or the Atlanta arts community. And we chatted with her about things she was interested in. And we'd always looked for something because we thought she was really talented, and we wanted to find a project to work with her on, and we finally decided to just write something for her. And so we just thought about what we wanted to see her do, and that's where the film came from.
And this is a little bit of an aside from this particular movie, but you mentioned this Atlantic Film Community or Commission or something. How many of these types of organizations are you involved in? And I get a lot of emails from people, and I guess especially when you're back in Atlanta, I get a lot of emails from people that are not in LA for whatever reason, they can't move to LA. And so I always try and think of what are some ways that they can kind of break into the industry. And it sounds like this was a real good opportunity for you guys just to meet local filmmakers. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. What was available in Atlanta? What sort of organizations, and which ones did you find most helpful?
Well, we've been, you know, in the Atlanta filmmaking community for a while, and that's not an organization. Gotcha. Just talking generally about the community that's there. But the Atlanta Film Festival has a strong community, and they have programming throughout the year that is a good place to just meet people. I started a female organization called New Mavericks, which
is it still around?
I don't know if it's still around or not, but and then I was in Film Fatales, which is a great organization for female directors,
and that's nationwide, but they have,
but it's specific. Gotcha. For female directors. And then yeah, there's just a bunch throughout the years, and they've all been varying degrees of helpful. It's mostly just being in the community and volunteering on other people's stuff, and you know, just being a nice person.
And, I mean, it really is like finding good work that other people are doing and then going and meeting them and just saying, hey, I really like what you're doing. Like, just, just talk to you. Let's talk, you know?
Yeah.
And we're always doing that with actors. Cause we always like we love writing for someone versus let's write something and then try to cast it. And so we've always been like searching for collaborators and different people to work with. So
yeah,
that's always our approach to things.
Yeah, gotcha. So let's talk about the writing of this script, The Devil to Pay. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your collaboration. How do you guys work? Do you sit in a room and come up with index cards for an outline? And then do you divide up scenes? Do you each write scenes and then critique each other's scenes? How does your sort of collaboration work?
Sure. Basically what you just said.
Okay.
We do everything pretty classically. The note card thing we definitely do, and that is in the room together, arguing about stuff and getting it all up. And then we write a long form treatment. It's usually like 15 pages. But once we start writing, typing, like even in the treatment phase, it's in separate rooms. We type in Dropbox. We split things up, even down to individual scenes for the entire script. But what's cool, because there's two of us, then we can be writing two different scenes at the same time. And we just number it, version 1, 2, 3, and we just rewrite each other until we have a color coding system, but until we both agree that the scene's green. And then, so our first drafts, every scene's been rewritten 15 times. So our first draft reads like a second or third draft, most people's vomit drafts, because every scene's been rewritten so many times by then.
Oh, I gotcha. And do you guys ever find there's some impasses you come to and you just don't see eye to eye? And how do you get past those impasses? How do you work, you know, through those?
We argue.
Yeah, all the time.
You know, sometimes it'll happen that one of us will write a scene and the other one will make changes, and then the other one will just change it right back to their version. And we're like, okay, we need to have a talk about what's happening here. So but we'll hash it out. And whenever we fight, it's always, you know, trying to make the movie better, and we're fighting to make the movie better. And whoever can make the most compelling argument and convince the other one wins. But in that way, we're, you know, everything has to earn its way into the film.
We're always the higher level goal is to make as good a thing as possible. And we try to, as much as we can, remove the ego from it. And like, I love when her idea is better than mine. Like, yeah, I'm genuinely exactly. Like, oh, great. Cause I wouldn't have thought of that. And now the script's going to be better because of that. So, we always have that in mind.
And a lot of times when we come to an impasse like that, what we realize is that the other one just doesn't understand what the other one's trying to do in the script. And when we talk it out, then it becomes clear. Oh, you were trying to, okay, now I know exactly what to do. And we get in there and it's fine.
Gotcha. You mentioned Dropbox as one of the tools that you use. Are you using Final Draft? So you're just taking, you know, Final Draft scripts and putting it up there? Are you taking Word documents? Are there any other tools that you use to help you with collaboration?
We're currently using Fade In.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dropbox is the probably the single most helpful thing once we discovered that, because like I said, we break it down into acts and then sequences and then scenes, and then we're on Mac, so the you can color label, and so like I have a color and she has a color, and when red's on top of it, the other one doesn't touch it, and then when it's the red goes away, I know I can rewrite her mm-hmm. her scene, and then so that's super important. Fade In, and we write our treatments in Pages, just because Word sucks on the Mac.
It's just a Mac thing.
It's not that I love Pages, but
the great thing about Fade In is that because we write in that that segmented kind of way, it has a function where you can just select a folder and it'll just
The joining together. Like I had problems with, if to get geeky, Final Draft joining, I had to literally cut and paste. Maybe they changed, pain in the ass. Whereas you can go in and lasso 10 sequences, and if I've numbered them, they'll be in right order and go boop, and there's one thing. It's just so much easier.
Yeah, it saves us a lot.
So just that function, because of the way we specifically write, that function made that so much better.
Gotcha. So when you guys are in this outline stage, how long, like on this particular script would be a good example, how long do you spend on the outline stage versus how long do you spend on the actual writing scenes, dialogue?
Okay, yeah, this particular script is going to be a terrible
example
because we wrote the whole thing from concept to finished thing in like 12 days.
Yeah, it's...
But that is not normal.
It's not normal
at all. We normally do a normal, you know, 6-8 week thing. So I think it was probably 2 or 3 weeks outlining and then, you know, 6-8 weeks writing a draft. Typically. On a normal, typical
Yeah, we usually take like a week to put up note cards and break the story and then, you know,
and then
a week on the treatment, refining things, and then we'll start writing.
And as far as your development process, it sounds like you had the director kind of already lined up as you were writing this. Were you giving her note or giving her different drafts or different scenes? Was she involved as this thing was being written, or did you wait to have a draft and then she came in and gave her notes at that point?
Are you talking about The Devil to Pay?
Yeah, correct.
We directed it.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that was the previous one. Gotcha. Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the first thing that occurred to me when I saw the trailer for this, and I apologize, I haven't seen the full movie, was it was very similar, at least in tone and sort of look, to Winter's Bone. Were there some other films that you were looking at as sort of other movies in similar genres, and how did you kind of interpret those and look at those and maybe try and circumvent some of the tropes and maybe even use some of the tropes that are in those genres?
I think we honestly weren't that inspired by films as much as we are Southern Gothic literature and outsider art and bluegrass music and just all the other elements that influenced the film more than I would say any specific film.
Yeah.
But that being said, some of our favorite Southern films are things like The Heat of the Night and Mississippi Burning and things from the late 60s, early 70s, those genre of films.
Like Deliverance.
There's a blatant Deliverance homage in there. We have a guy playing a banjo on a front porch. People are either going to realize it's Deliverance or they're going to think it's Kermit the Frog. It'll be one of
the actors. Started playing Rainbow Connection on the banjo.
Okay, so you had your script done. What were those next steps to actually get this into production? How did you raise the money? How did you get this thing finished?
Yeah, it was an insane deadline. Like we finished the script, we sent it to Danielle. She didn't know we were right for her. And then once she signed on, then we set a start date. We were just like, we don't have anything but Danielle and the script. We are starting on this date, and no one will change that date, and that is when it is happening.
Which is not, I can't suggest anyone does that.
It's
because
so stressful.
It was incredibly stressful. But it just worked out that, I mean, two weeks before we shot, we got the money.
Yeah.
And people were turning down work to come work, turning down gigs to come work on this film, and we couldn't guarantee it was
going to
happen.
We had a couple of small investors, but the big investor didn't come in until 2 weeks before. Yeah. And we kind of had, because we were so committed to making this film, we had versions in our head of how we could do it. And we were like, we'll just make it for this small amount of money that we have if we don't get a bigger investor. And luckily we did get that money right before we shot.
And maybe you can talk about that process a little bit, just raising money. What did your pitch look like to these folks? And ultimately, who are these? Were they friends, family, business people, people that invest in films? What is your recommendation for people that want to raise money for their film?
I can't give a blanket recommendation because every film is so different. This just happened to be a friend of a friend who was a filmmaker, but also works in finance, so had some capital and was interested in film.
What we did was we put the word out. We basically, I mean, this sounds awful, but like, we're connected in the Atlanta community and just in general over the years. And so we were just like, we are making a film. It is starting on this date. We are looking for these things. Who has these things? Mm-hmm. And a friend of ours, a long-term friend, had just finished a film with an investor, and that investor was looking to put money in another film, and so he connected us.
But the one thing I will say is the friend who connected us, we've known for 15 years, and have just been friendly, and it's never been like, 15 years from now, I'm going to get something out of him, you know? And that's our like golden rule above everything else, is like, be someone that people want to work with. And it's all about long-term relationships. Yeah. And whether you're in LA or Atlanta or wherever, it's a much smaller world than it seems like it is. And it always ends up being a friend of a friend.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm curious, as you were raising this money, though, how much do you think the fact that you had some credits at this point behind you, you had been on the blacklist list, at least in Hollywood, is among screenwriters is very prestigious. Obviously, at this point, you had your two feature credits. How much do you think that influenced bringing this investor on? It sounds like he's pretty sophisticated, understands the business aspects a little bit. And how much do you think those factors, as opposed to this 15-year friendship you had with this person?
Well, I mean, I think you definitely have to be prepared for opportunity, right? So like the friendship is what gave us the opportunity, and then we were prepared with our experience and our credits and our ability.
And he shared a short film we had done, so they could see that, oh, they know how to shoot something. So that was probably the single biggest thing that was him vouching for us, and then the guy getting to watch a short, something we'd made, and go, oh, okay, they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then reading the script and loving it. So it was those three things.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So I always like to end these interviews just by asking the guests what they've seen recently that they thought was really cool. Is there anything that's just been maybe a little under the radar, HBO, Hulu, Netflix, that you've seen in the last 6 months or year that you thought maybe screenwriters should take a look at?
Oh, man.
That's a really good question. We watch stuff all the time.
Well, what's something you liked? Something that you just guys really liked recently?
Relic.
The new movie that just came out that we haven't seen yet, or the old movie
we saw about the woman with the dementia, Australia.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay.
Yeah,
because we also watched The Relic recently. That's why I wanted to know which one you're talking about.
We watched Relic recently, which I thought was really beautifully done.
I would say the last movie I saw that I flipped out over and was so jealous that I wasn't involved with was Nightcrawler, which I know has been a couple of years now, but that's one that I was like, oh my god, how was I not? I'm so jealous that I wasn't involved in some way that I didn't write that or whatever. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, I noticed, I think that's on Netflix right now, if anybody wants to check it out. How can people see The Devil to Pay? Do you know what the release schedule is going to be like for it?
Yep. Yeah, it'll be out in drive-ins on October 2nd, and it will be on VOD pretty much everywhere on October 6th.
Okay, perfect, perfect. What's the best way for people to keep up with what you're doing? Twitter, Facebook, a blog, anything you're comfortable sharing, I'll round up for the show notes.
We're on Instagram and Facebook, both. It's just Ruckus and Lean Sky. Okay. Pretty easy to find us.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Well, I really appreciate you guys coming on and talking with me today. Good luck with this film and good luck with all your future projects as well.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
I just want to talk quickly about SYS Select. It's a service for screenwriters to help them sell their screenplays and get writing assignments. The first part of the service is the SYS Select Screenplay Database. Screenwriters upload their screenplays along with a logline, synopsis, and other pertinent information like budget and genre, and then producers search for and hopefully find screenplays they want to produce. Dozens of producers are in the system looking for screenplays right now. There have been a number of success stories come out of the service. You can find out about all the SYS Select successes by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/success. Also on SYS podcast episode 222, I talk with Steve Deering, who was the first official success story to come out of the SYS Select database. When you join SYS Select, you get access to the screenplay database along with all the other services that we're providing to SYS Select members. These services include the newsletter. This monthly newsletter goes out to a list of over 400 producers who are actively seeking writers and screenplays. Each SYS Select member can pitch one screenplay in this monthly newsletter. We also provide screenwriting leads. We have partnered with one of the premier paid screenwriting leads services, so I can syndicate their leads to SYS Select members. There are lots of great paid leads coming in each week from our partner. Recently, we've been getting 5 to 10 high-quality paid leads per week. These leads run the gamut. There's producers looking for a specific type of spec script to producers looking to hire a screenwriter to write up one of their ideas or properties. They're looking for shorts, features, TV, and web series pilots, all types of projects. If you sign up for SYS Select, you'll get these leads emailed directly to you several times per week. Also, you get access to the SYS Select forum, where we will help you with your logline and query letter and answer any screenwriting related questions that you might have. We also have a number of screenwriting classes that are recorded and available in the SYS Select forum. These are all the classes that I've done over the years, so you'll have access to those whenever you want. Once you join, the classes cover every part of writing your screenplay, from concept to outlining to the first act, second act, third act, as well as other topics like writing short films and pitching your projects in person. Once again, if this sounds like something you'd like to learn more about, please go to sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. Again, that is sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. On the next episode of the podcast, I'm going to be interviewing writer, producer, director, and also actor Miska Kajanas. He did a low-budget feature called Insanity, so he comes on to talk about that. He's from Finland and actually moved to the USA to pursue his dream of being an actor. We talk about that a little bit. He actually was able to get cast in a number of really cool roles, shows like Modern Family. He's had some small roles on, and now he's moving into being a filmmaker, really trying to write, direct, and also continue to act. And again, he's coming on to talk about his film Insanity. So keep an eye out for that episode next week. That's the show. Thank you for listening.